fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
And welcome to Nerd Pride Radio's first ever bonus fingertips episode. That's right, fingertips number one. All right, let me explain what I'm doing here. First off, the fingertips, I've added this segment into my regular podcast, Nerd Pride Radio. By the way, my name is Mike Jones, but you guys already know that. Anyway, I've added fingertips into my regular podcast as a way of kind of clearing out my master list. It's just little short topics that only take a few minutes, or at least nominally only take a few minutes. I've spent quite a lot of time on some of them, but I'm clearing them out quick, and I call them fingertips in homage to the music you just heard as the opening from They Might Be Giants. On their Apollo 18 album, they had a segment of, I think, 17 little short clips, little song snippets that were, you know, anywhere from 5 to like 30 seconds long, and they were all in a row on the album, and their original intent for them was that when people put their CDs into the CD players, back then we had CD players to play our music, and you hit it on shuffle, then these little snippets of songs would just pop up in the middle of other tracks. They'd show up in between tracks, and you'd get like 5 seconds of a nonsense lyric, and then it would go away, and that was just entertaining to them. And so those little short segments that aren't full songs, they were their fingertips. And so for me, that's what I'm doing with these. These are short segments that don't really fill up a full segment of my regular podcast. So, why am I doing a bonus episode? Well, that's a great question. As it turns out, I have a user, let's just say a listener. I was gonna name a name, but, one of my listeners, is having a rough time right now. And, I was sympathizing with them, and I said, you know, that this person commented that, hey, it's kind of nice, hearing the podcast this morning because it kind of makes things, you know, kind of makes the morning go a little bit better. It was a nice pick me up to the day when things are going a little bad. And so I said, just being flippant, I said, wow, I feel bad. I wish I could do something for you. You know, if I thought putting out 5 podcasts a week would somehow fix all your problems, I would do that. And they responded with, well, couldn't hurt to try. So, challenge accepted. So let's see what we can do here. And I don't know if I'm actually going to do 5 of them in a week, but I figure I've got tons of excess material on my master list, at least for now. I'm going to quickly use them all up, but for now I got some extra material. So I figure I'll throw out a few bonus episodes, and I have no idea if these are going to be 30 seconds long or 10 minutes or what I'm going to do, but I've got my topics in order here. And for each one of these bonus episodes, I'll just pick one, talk until I'm done, and then we'll turn it off and we'll see how that goes. And so this first one, as you already saw from the title, if you pay attention to titles, maybe you don't, is the Oxford comma. The Oxford comma, as many of you probably already know, is the comma that goes before the conjunction in a series of items. When you're writing things out and you're listing a series of 3 or more items, you put a comma between every item, and then the question is always, do you put a comma before the and or whatever it is? Do you put a comma before the and or not? Is it really needed? And in general, one of the traditional answers has always been, yes, you always put it in there. That's just the way it goes, and it's in the Oxford style dictionary or whatever the name of the damn guide is. And so it's called the Oxford comma or series comma, and then that comma always goes before the and because, according to them, it is to maintain clarity, because you are very rarely are you going to make things less clear. Very rarely will you make things more ambiguous by adding the comma in, as opposed to there are oftentimes where not putting the comma in could lead to some ambiguity. But it's questionable. And so, you know, the general rule has always been just put it in there. And if you're one that follows the debates on this sort of thing, and have seen all the arguments, there's actually arguments on both sides that show that, you know, the meaning is more clear with a comma in this case. The meaning is more clear without a comma in this case. Blah, 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 blah. And so most reasonable people say, well, you know what? Then just put the comma in if it makes it more clear, and leave it out if that makes it more clear. And if it doesn't make any difference, then why bother? It's just an extra character that you don't need to use to take up space, which is kind of my opinion on it. I almost never put that comma in. However, every once in a while I do. You know, and for example, if you're ever separating items in a series with semicolons because you're items are so complex that they have their own multiple commas, and so you need semicolons between items. You always put the semicolon in before the conjunction. Well, maybe you don't, because you can actually write things simply and straightforward so that people can understand them. I can't do that. So I use semicolons a lot. But the whole point is just use common sense to what's going to make it most clear. That's the most reasonable answer. However, my wife, who is a teacher, this is why this came up. They were in the teacher's lounge having a huge argument over it, because apparently there's proponents of both sides sitting there. And a lot of it comes down to, well, this is what I was taught. And what I would say is, since most style guides in the United States, not all, but most, tend to say that the proper way of doing things, I think the APA guide, for example, says that you do put in the Oxford comma. So therefore, what I would teach students is, yep, put it in. Don't even bother to give them the optional. That's something that's more advanced. They'll learn that down the road that, yeah, maybe you can, maybe you can't. But you know, you might as well teach them to put it in, because then at least that way they'll be right by the style guides that are going to be ruling their lives through high school and college. But the Oxford comma, despite being the title of this episode, isn't the whole thing here, because I also today was looking at split infinitives, which again, split infinitive, you're never supposed to split the infinitive. The infinitive being a verb that is prefaced by the word to, for example. So, to gather. And so if you split the infinitive, it's generally inserting a word, usually an adverb, in between the to and the verb. So you wind up, instead of to gather, it's to slowly gather. And now your adverb has split your infinitive. And for whatever reason, there's a long period in recent history where we were taught that it's completely inappropriate to split your infinitives. You always need to find a way to rephrase your sentence so that you can remove that split infinitive. So instead of to slowly gather, you say to gather slowly, or whatever. And it turns out, though, that you can come up with tons of examples where, you know, the exact placement of your adverb really makes a difference to sometimes the meaning of the sentence, sometimes the emphasis of the sentence, sometimes so therefore, again, you know, to my mind, it's whatever makes things most clear. And if you need to split an infinitive, by God, split it. And in fact, as it turns out, and I got this from, I think, the Today I Found Out, I think it was on their Daily Knowledge podcast. They were talking about split infinitives and said that technically, split infinitives have never been grammatically incorrect in English. Never. It's only we've been doing it for, you know, 400 years. We've had split infinitives in English because it was a natural thing to do. It worked in perfectly to natural speech patterns, and people translated that into their writing. For centuries, we've been doing it. And then somewhere 100, 150 years ago, I don't listen to details. I just get an overall sense of things. Someone decided that since splitting an infinitive is something that you cannot do in Latin, apparently the way they phrased it was, it's impossible to do this in Latin. Therefore, since split infinitives don't exist in Latin, and Latin is the only proper language, apparently, if you're a scholar, they therefore decided that split infinitives should be verboten in English as well, simply because, well, look, if you can't do it in Latin, then why would we corrupt our language to do something so base as to split our infinitives, which clearly, stupid. It's never been grammatically incorrect. There's never been a reason not to do it, especially when it adds the flavor and it adds meaning to it. And so putting these things together, because I love words and language and punctuation, and I just love the ideas around them. And I put all this together in that I'm not a stickler for any of it. And I think I've said this on the regular podcast before, but in my mind, you use whatever gets your point across the best in any particular case. It's always about pure communication. And for me, that means there are times when I use, I write the way I speak in some cases. In most cases, you know, my writing is a little more proper, a little more formal than my speech, especially, hold on a second, phone. Had to reset a password. So for me, I will often use, words that aren't proper. But you know, gonna is one of my favorites. G-O-N-N-A. Now that I say it out loud, I know I've had this conversation with you guys before, but I like to repeat myself. I like the word gonna. It gives a good sense. I mean, yes, I could say going to, but it doesn't sound the way I speak. And so I like it when I can use, some more relaxed versions, sometimes, but That's not even, those aren't even good examples. I do lots of informal writing, and so I use lots of ain'ts and gonna's, and I use, you know, ellipses that have six or seven dots in them because I want to emphasize that pause or something stupid like that. And that's, oh man, that's one of the parenthetical type punctuation. Anytime I want to set off a phrase in some way, I will use long dashes to set them off, or sometimes semicolons, or sometimes ellipses on either side, or sometimes just I throw things into parentheses for my parentheticals. Go figure on that one. I do that way too much, but that's not relevant to what I'm talking about. My other one, and this is one that has always been a pet peeve of mine, is that I was taught in school that when you do quotation marks, the end punctuation of that sentence always goes inside the quotation marks. Which drives me crazy because, but what if I'm asking a question, for example, and the question, you know, what's in quotation marks is what is a quote of what something somebody said. So the thing inside quotation marks is an actual quote. All right. But the question was not asked in the quote. I'm asking a question about the quote. Well, then why would I put the quotation marks why would I put a question mark inside the quotes? Why would I do that? Because then it would appear, the way you're reading it, it looks like the question was part of the quote. And it's not. It's not. I'm asking a question about the quote, so I put the question mark outside to indicate that, okay, there's what they said, but I'm asking a question about it. Does that make any sense at all? To me, your end punctuation can go inside or outside the quotes, depending on, again, what makes it the most clear? What conveys the sense of what you're actually talking about? And I love having the freedom to, because I don't have to write formal papers. I'm not submitting things to scientific journals. I'm not writing term papers for English Lit. I'm not doing any of that. I'm writing stuff for me, for my fun. I write stuff because I'm communicating with people on the internet. I'm expounding on whatever my stupid views are. I'm writing games or short stories that typically I'm self-publishing. So all of these things are things where I have the freedom to just, I can do it however the hell I want. And as long as it gets the sense across, that's the magic of it. And so I guess this whole diatribe, is really just to say, you know what, grammar Nazis, lay off a little bit. You know, I've really, over the last about 5 years, I've really let up on a lot of my grammar Nazi things that, you know what, there's things that just aren't that important anymore. Even stupid stuff like supposedly. Yes, supposedly, it's getting to be a word, and that's just the way the world works. And I still correct my kids on it, and I tell them, you know, the word supposedly. You know that, right? Not that I don't think my kids have ever used supposedly, but when they do stuff like that, I always give them the correction, just to let them know that this is what's considered proper, and you don't want to sound like an ignoramus if you don't have to. But you know what? Language changes, things changes, just flow with it. I mean, yes, is it absolutely bizarre and disgusting to me that the word literally now means figuratively, and thus I don't have a word for literally that everyone in the world understands as meaning literally? It means that if you want to say something that this literally happened, you now have to say, yeah, this literally happened, as in this actually happened. This is not even a, you have to explain it more. I liked the word literally, and I'm sorry that it's been corrupted and taken away from us, but people apparently needed something more extreme to express themselves. And so they've taken literally from us, and we'll have to find something new. And it's disappointing, but you know what? It's the way the world works, and it's not like we're going to turn back the clock on this one. It's going to evolve. And I love to pick on the French, because the French have like literal government-sponsored grammar Nazis whose whole job is to make sure that French stays pure and that people are not screwing up the French language. Yeah, heck with all that. You know what? I say play with the language, mold it, shape it, make it your own. The English is a magical language. I absolutely love it. Horrible to learn. Horrible to master all the rules and subtleties of it, but I love the versatility of it. And I suppose I could say this about any language. I love English just because it's the only language I speak, I suppose. And I could be doing this if I were speaking German or Spanish or Vietnamese, it doesn't make any difference. I'm sure there's all sorts of rules in other languages that I could be saying the exact same things about. Is that why would we limit ourselves if we can express ourselves better, if we can make our meaning clearer, if we can communicate better? Why wouldn't we? Why would you enforce some arbitrary rule just for the sake of arbitrary rules when, breaking those rules actually communicates better? That's all that matters. You know what? I've prattled on enough. Thank you for joining me for bonus episode number one. And with any luck, tomorrow there will be a bonus fingertips number two. You never know. It could happen.